Welcome to Moving the Needle, casual conversations about ways big and small to impact student learning. Brought to you by the Faculty Center for Teaching and Learning at the University of Maryland, Baltimore. I'm Scott Riley, too. Let's move the needle. Welcome back to Moving the Needle. Research or teaching? It's a question that many of us have heard more than once in our careers. Faculty are often categorized based on their primary focus. But as the landscape of education continues to develop, so too do the roles and dynamics within universities. Traditionally, research-focused faculty members have borne the brunt of teaching responsibilities. However, there has been a notable shift towards incorporating more teaching-focused faculty into the academic mix. This shift in faculty composition has inevitably led to distinct sets of expectations and standards for each category. Today, our discussion delves into the realm of teaching-focused faculty and explores the pathways and prospects for those interested in this trajectory. We aim to unravel the intricacies of what it truly means to be a teaching-focused faculty in the modern academic landscape and shed light on the future trajectory of this vital academic cohort. It is my pleasure to introduce our guest today, Dr. Samantha Fold. Dr. Fold is a clinical assistant professor at the University of Maryland School of Social Work. She's also a member of the Leaders in Education, Academy of Presidential Scholars, Educator Development Subcommittee. During her tenure on the committee, she has collaborated with others to explore the role teaching-focused faculty play at UMB and other universities, as well as the importance of mentorship and teaching-focused faculty career pathways. Thank you for being here today, Samantha.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Of course. So some of the charges of the Educator Development Committee were to work on promotion guidance tools, peer observation protocols, and mentorship programs for faculty at UMB. And from my understanding, this led you all to investigate the faculty composition, promotion pathways, and professional development opportunities, not just here, but across universities throughout the U.S. And so my first question is, what have you learned about the types of faculty here at UMB and at other schools?
So I think one of the biggest learnings has been connected to the diversity of faculty roles and how those roles are interpreted, what workloads look like, what requirements look like, what mentorship and promotion looks like, what structures are formalized and what are not. In general, it seems from our investigation, and Scott, I know you've been a huge part in driving that forward, it seems that most universities, most colleges, we've explored graduate schools a great deal, have the what might be considered the traditional tenure track faculty role that includes significant attention to research, balanced with attention to teaching and attention to scholarship. And then many universities also have teaching-focused roles and some research-specific roles. I know here at the School of Social Work at UMB, where I am, we have non-tenure track contractual faculty lines for teaching-focused faculty and then also for research-focused faculty who do not engage in teaching. And it seemed as though those roles are present, though to different extents within different university systems.
Wonderful. So if we think about it, we can kind of, I know it's a simplification, but we can say that there are two big categories of faculty that split out into a lot of more complicated ones, but we can basically put them in the research faculty category or the teaching faculty category for simplicity's sake. Would you say that's reasonable?
Yeah, I think that's true, particularly in non-tenure track roles.
And so now I'm kind of curious, throughout your research, what impact do those positions have at their universities? Do you see them having a lot of overlap or are they pretty separate?
I do think when we're talking about teaching versus research-focused faculty, what someone's job looks like and what they're doing on a day-to-day basis is really different. It doesn't seem to me, based on what we've explored, that there's a great deal of overlap, though certainly many teaching-focused faculty are engaged in research projects. And typically, it seems as though their research areas or research focus is often in service of their teaching, in service of curriculum development, in service of promoting student development, as opposed to sort of going deep into, you know, their area of knowledge or expertise, developing, you know, we're in a, on a healthcare campus, so developing new treatments, things like that. It seems as though teaching faculty, when they are researching, are more student and curriculum focused.
So it sounds like we've discussed what's separate about them, right? And so the question now becomes what's similar about the roles. And I think one thing that's important to highlight here is the expectations of the role, right? Because like you mentioned, it's one thing for teaching focused faculty to jump into research, but it's very much focused on the service aspect of their workload, right? They're not necessarily expected to provide the same level of content towards the scholarship role, which, by the way, we can define the faculty role in general as having three major components, right? Scholarship, teaching, and service. And so if we think of the scholarship as very much the research aspect and teaching is as teaching, like you mentioned, there's definitely a lot of teaching focused faculty that I've met that are very passionate about research, but it's geared towards, like you said, curriculum design, you know, coursework, things like that. Whereas a traditional research faculty would be doing research to advance things in their specific field of expertise.
Yes.
And so my question now is, you know, what trends have you seen or what patterns have you seen for any overlap between the positions?
You know, I think that there is overlap in the positions in that we're all working within educational institutions where the education of students is and should be central to the mission of the organization in addition to the research component. I think these three areas that you've identified, teaching, service, research, obviously, you know, at the School of Social Work at UMB, our workloads are very explicitly defined. So my workload as teaching-focused clinical faculty is 80% teaching, 20% service. And if in the research realm, it would be the opposite, the focus would be on research. Now, in my contract, and I think that this is true for at least speaking to many colleagues and exploring what we can of many teaching roles, we've looked at many different promotion and tenure documents and different guidance, at least from our state system. It seems as though teaching roles typically are defined by requirements for teaching and service, but the expectation for scholarship, the expectation for what's often more informally in our setting called dissemination continues to, is certainly there for us as well. And I think that's something that becomes a little bit of a challenge in the role is that your time and the time that is allotted for you is not the right word, but your time is really focused on teaching. Your time is really focused on curriculum development, on service to the school, on service to, depending on your field, service to the community, service to your professional organizations. And in order to progress in your career, scholarship, whether it is specifically defined as part of your promotion requirements or not, is important in academia. That's how we sort of develop and prove our expertise. And it's, you know, an ingrained part of how we move the work forward in our fields. And so I would say there is that overlap in the scholarship expectations implicitly, though it's not necessarily explicitly outlined in our contracts, in our requirements, in the same way, at least depending on the school. And that's also what I think is interesting about the teaching-focused faculty role, is that as we've investigated what promotion looks like, what mentorship looks like, what roles look like for all of these different types of faculty at colleges and universities, both here in Maryland and around the country, it seems as though the expectations of tenure-track faculty tend to be fairly similar across institutions, across fields, and the documents that explore requirements, expectations, and even just in speaking with colleagues about what's expected, how things are framed, what promotion paths are available, do seem a little bit more varied. It seems as though standards and expectations in this role haven't been maybe codified in the same way, which is also part of the reason that it's challenging to find research specifically about teaching faculty and the experiences of teaching focused faculty as well.
100%. I agree. And this kind of brings up an interesting topic that I'd like to explore a little bit more with regards to promotion practices for, you know, we're talking about tenured versus contingent faculty. So we've kind of switched from talking about maybe teaching focused faculty, because contingent faculty can be both research or teaching, right? But what I'm interested here, at least from my perspective, is that many teaching focused faculty are in the contingent category, right? They're a non-tenure yes. track. And so with that, I'm curious, what have you discovered? What have you learned as part of the committee with regards to career pathways for teaching focused faculty and contingent faculty?
I think one of the things we've learned, again, both connected to exploring the research and also connected to, I think, just more qualitatively, our discussions between colleagues, is that I know that when I was going into academia, I was essentially told, if you want to focus on teaching, you could maybe pursue a tenure track at a small teaching college, but you're never going to teaching isn't going to be the emphasis of tenured work at most larger colleges or universities, that is, you're looking at a contingent or contractual faculty position. And that is, it's on the minds of teaching faculty quite a bit, right? It drives what you do. It drives the decisions that you make. It influences how you can interact with your colleagues in a system where lots of folks are focused on tenure or have tenure. And so that is something that's come up in our research, is that teaching focused faculty, particularly in larger university systems like UMB, where we work, those teaching roles are contingent faculty roles. And what that means, at least implicitly, is often that teaching folks can feel less valued, more insecure in their jobs. Certainly that impacts our teaching, it impacts our work. One of the reasons I was so glad to be invited to participate on this subcommittee and to be invited to be part of this LEAPS initiative at UMB was that President Jarrell in particular was really stating that there needed to be a greater emphasis and a greater value on teaching. And I think we've all felt as part of the subcommittee that one of the ways you demonstrate that value, demonstrate that emphasis, and demonstrate that importance in academia is creating pathways for better promotion, pathways for tenure status or permanent status. And that does exist. There's precedent for it existing both within the university system and more nationally.
Yeah, wonderful. What has your committee seen from other universities with respect to evaluation metrics for promotion in those teaching-focused roles and those contingent roles?
I think one of the things that's really stood out in the research is the reliance on teaching evaluations as a primary metric for assessment of teaching-focused faculty, which makes sense. There's also, and there's a recognition that teaching evaluations, you know, a strong, strong foundation in the research demonstrating that teaching evaluations are subject to a great deal of bias, the needing to sort of keep teaching evaluations top of mind for faculty can lead to pretty significant grade inflation. There's issues with teaching evaluations as a primary mechanism for evaluating teaching. The other thing that we've seen a lot in the research is an emphasis on teaching observations, peer observations, and observations from more senior teaching faculty and senior mentors. There are some great frameworks for that. Something that's come out as particularly important, I think, in a lot of that literature, actually, is the attention to the relationship and how teaching observations are used in evaluation and professional development for teaching faculty, because when there is concern that there might be an over-reliance on the teaching observation, or there's concern that it could be used in a pejorative way, I think the literature shows that potentially they're not as helpful, that really teaching observations are most helpful as a supportive professional development tool where you have the opportunity to get feedback from a mentor or from, you know, a peer, someone who sits in on your classes and doesn't often have the opportunity to see what you're doing, give you feedback, even just to reflect your strengths, as well as to brainstorm new ideas for teaching development. So I think from our exploration of the research that teaching evaluations and teaching observations have been primary ways of evaluating the teaching. Now then when we look at promotion pathways, I know something that's come up as a focus of our conversation has also been, what does it look like if we are being promoted? Typically, there's an emphasis on teaching. There's then an emphasis on service. So what does that service look like? Is it committee participation? Is it student advising? Is it service to the community? Is it service to our professional organizations? And then there's that missing piece that is not often clearly defined as part of our roles, which is scholarship or dissemination, but is very important implicitly and explicitly in the academic system. So here at the School of Social Work, at least, we do have a clear promotion pathway for teaching-focused faculty. You can be an assistant, a clinical assistant professor, clinical associate professor, clinical full professor, and that pathway and the promotion track looks very similar to promotion review for tenure track faculty. It involves external reviews. It involves sort of a full demonstration of what your portfolio is. And something that comes up is, you know, it's scholarship is important in that. Dissemination is important in that in some way, but it isn't built into our requirements, sort of our guiding documents in the same way. It's just something that we all know and that we're mentored to know is important. And that's something that came up a lot in our research, in our discussions, in our exploration of these documents as well, is that what's stated as our job description, what's stated as the pathway to promotion isn't always exactly, doesn't tell you everything that you need to do to really advance, to grow your career, to get promoted. And obviously, our focus as teaching faculty isn't just on promotion. It's about growth and development as educators. And the promotion piece is certainly important to professional fulfillment, to different roles that we can take on within our schools, within the universities. And so it's a key piece of, I think, what's needed to support and also to retain excellent teaching faculty.
Yeah, I agree. And I was interested when you were talking about dissemination as part of the scholarship, because I know in your research, you have come across some what I would call unique methods of dissemination. One of the things that I thought was really interesting was when you were thinking about teaching-focused faculty, one thing that was brought up is opportunities like this, you know, a podcast. Mm-hmm. What value, what impact does this have from a scholarly perspective for teaching-focused faculty? And so as someone who's dug into these things, what are some other components that or other mediums that you see being valuable for teaching-focused faculty to grow their career? You know, if podcasts are a potential avenue, what are some other things you've come across that some teaching-focused faculty may not know to consider?
Sure. Things like podcasts, things like media interviews, things like social media campaigns, even websites, apps, interactive media platforms, community work, community events, workshops, trainings. Most of those things have not traditionally been considered scholarly dissemination in academia. Typically, scholarly dissemination has focused on academic writing in peer-reviewed journals, presentations at peer-reviewed conferences, you know, research consortiums, things like that. But I do think when a university values teaching and values the work of educators, there's also great value in building the field. And there are so many ways you can do that. The reality is a lot of folks, unless you're publishing open access, which let's be honest, teaching faculty don't typically have large grants that will fund open access publications. Unless you're publishing open access, when you contribute to the work, to the field in that way, people, the community more broadly isn't necessarily seeing it. A lot of folks can't pay $30 to $50 to look at an article you've written, but they could watch a YouTube video. They could listen to a podcast. And so when you're teaching and when you're working in an area that's impactful to the community and people have access to those resources, that is meaningful dissemination. And I think the thing that's key is that as teaching-focused faculty, when we are going up for promotion, when we're looking towards advancing in our careers, the onus really is on us in many ways to demonstrate to our colleagues and to our deans who are making these decisions that this is impactful, this is important, and to frame it in terms of scholarship and dissemination, because it is.
Yeah, and this makes me really happy because I have a new phrase based off of what you just mentioned. I'm going to latch onto this. Access contributes to meaningful dissemination. And through these accessible forms of dissemination, we're impacting the communities around us and people at large in a scholarly way. I think that's a really cool concept. And so this brings up another point that I wanted to discuss with you and what you found in the committee is these barriers that teaching focused faculty face. You mentioned, you know, not having access to large grants to create open access journal articles, but with barriers in mind, what are some of the support systems or resources that you've become aware of for teaching focused faculty so that they can enhance their career, they can develop their teaching effectiveness for promotion, whether it's on the horizon or, you know, being developed?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, there are many phenomenal teaching-focused, education development-focused organizations and resources that exist. Obviously, the Faculty Center for Teaching and Learning that you're involved in here at UMB.
Boop, boop.
Yep, is one of those things. I think the key thing that we've landed on as important in our research and in our exploration as a subcommittee has been mentorship. Mentorship and guidance is a huge resource for teaching-focused faculty, particularly because it seems that the landscape of academia and university systems has shifted back and forth a little bit. And I think throughout, you know, the past several decades, there has been more or less focus on teaching and teaching-focused faculty at different points. We seem to be in a moment where it's becoming increasingly recognized that teaching-focused faculty are particularly important and particularly important for the student experience. You know, there's greater knowledge and connection within the university. There's consistency there. Teaching-focused faculty tend to be, I think, most visible to and available to students. And so that really helps to enhance the student experience. And mentorship and understanding how to navigate this university system that, to your point in asking about, well, what are other ways that we can define and think about scholarship in the context of teaching faculty? These aren't necessarily the traditional ways that have been set forth in academia. And so supports to kind of guide us through that are important. It's a challenge sometimes because there aren't as many of those people who have been through the process already. And so I know at least here at our school, we have some amazing mentors. And I just want to really name that they are, that mentorship, there's a lot of mentorship that's falling on them. because there aren't so many people who have sort of taken that path ahead of them. But mentorship stands out, has stood out to us, I think, as one of the biggest areas of support and support needs and resources for teaching-focused faculty.
Yeah, I 100% agree there. I'm thinking about my own personal experience as a new instructor of only 2 years at UMB. I would not have made it nearly as far or been as successful as I am without individuals mentoring me, which wasn't necessarily part of their job description as a teaching-focused faculty. I don't think it's written anywhere that anyone needs to mentor me. So I really appreciate the outstanding mentors we have here. I also want to highlight another key aspect of mentorship that really supports teaching-focused faculty, and that's the aspect of advocacy and, on top of that, visibility. Because if you don't have anybody who's gone through this process before advocating for you at the higher levels, it's going to be really hard for you as an individual to get that same level of, you know, impact when you're trying to advocate for yourself.
Absolutely. And I'll say too that advocacy doesn't have to fall just on more senior, more experienced teaching-focused faculty. That advocacy ideally happens amongst all of our colleagues, all of our senior leaders, in their recognition of the importance of teaching-focused faculty. And it does, again, I think it does fall on us in some ways to explain our importance and to be really open and proud about the work that we're doing so that folks know and they see it. Because especially if you're doing amazing things in the classroom, the reality is that with the exception of, you know, for us, we get a teaching observation when we start, and then when we go up for promotion, which could be 3, 5 years, more than that, depending on the choices that you make and when you feel like you're ready. But we're not getting teaching observations very regularly. And so that means folks don't know what's happening in our classrooms. Folks don't know necessarily about the innovative or transformative work. We need to share that. And we need to share that through dissemination. We also need to share that as we are connecting with mentors and with folks who, to your point, can advocate with us and for us.
And I think with all those combined efforts, there can really be a positive effect on organizational culture for teaching-focused faculty.
Absolutely. And it's really important because it's such an important job. It's a meaningful job. I love this job. And it's important to name, you know, it's taxing, right? Especially, I think, in the, I won't even say post-pandemic world, because I don't know that we could really define what that means. But there has been an unprecedented, maybe that sounds cliche, but there's been an unprecedented rise in mental health struggles amongst everyone, particularly amongst students. I was looking at the statistics the other day, since we're in a grad school setting, and the current statistics are that up to 50% of graduate students are experiencing struggles like depression and anxiety. And often the role of teaching-focused faculty isn't just education. It is also mentorship. It's also advising. We take on a huge role, both formally and informally, doing that for students. And that is, that's tough work right now. It's important work, but it can be tough work.
And I'll support you on that claim of unprecedented, because in my own personal experience, I've been teaching for 10 years now, and the rise in student mental health issues over the past couple of years, at least from my own perspective, has skyrocketed. And like you said, one of our roles informally as teaching-focused faculty is to help support students through those struggles as best we can so that they can succeed academically while they're here at UMB. And that's another thing that we won't have time to discuss, but the kind of the invisible work or the unaccounted for work that teaching-focused faculty do with students that isn't necessarily directly academic, but is a support-based work that helps them succeed academically.
Yeah, it's something that's really implicit in our role. And I think there's a parallel between the mentorship that we do of students or that we offer to students and the mentorship that hopefully is offered to us. Because again, going back to some of that research that we've determined as a subcommittee is one of the things that is key and central in a mentorship. In a mentorship relationship is not just expertise, but it is that relationship. It's the development of a connection, it's approachability, it's warmth. And so that's something that we need to offer for students. It's something that we also need, I think, to be successful and to succeed and to, you know, feel as though we're working within a supportive organizational culture, which ultimately helps us to thrive and continue to develop as educators.
I can't think of anything else to add to that. This was wonderful, Samantha. I've got one more question that we kind of like to end the episodes on. It's going to be a pivot from what we've talked about before, but I always like to include it. What do you think is moving the needle? What is currently changing the landscape of teaching? I know we've talked a lot about, you know, teaching focused faculty, promotion, support for them. But in general, what do you think is changing the landscape of teaching?
I think that students are.
Oh.
And I think that students are in a really good way. Whereas previously, I think there was sort of this expectation that when you come to a university, you sit and you listen to a lecture from an expert, and then maybe you try it out and you learn how to do it. Students are really demanding, in the most positive sense, innovation in teaching, in communication. They're really demanding innovation in a lot of the ways that we go about education. They're looking for a lot more experiential work. They're looking for a lot more flexibility and choice in their ability to specialize and to elevate their own niche and their own interests. And I think that's really good. I think that pushes us as educators and also gives us the space to be more innovative, which then ties back into what we've been talking about in terms of a much broader view of what scholarship is and what scholarship means. So many of the, I actually had students last semester ask if they could take some of the resources that I had developed for us to use in class and build out a website so that those resources were more accessible to the community. And that was a great idea. It was a great example of dissemination and of sort of sharing the knowledge, sharing the resources, sharing the work. And it really was student-led and student-guided. And so I think the students continue to, as they innovate, push us to innovate, which has been really great for teaching. And then I think ultimately, hopefully it will lead to maybe us pushing universities to innovate and sort of recognizing the value and the work that we do as teaching focused faculty, even more than they do at this point as well.
Yeah, this makes me think I need to thank my students the next time I see them, because you're right. I haven't thought about it in a long time, but many of the times I've changed as a teacher are when the students have said explicitly, this needs to change, this is not working for us. And so I've had to adapt and get better and develop myself. So that's a really great answer. Thank you, Samantha.
Absolutely. And, you know, I want to be clear that I do think we're valued. I think our roles exist because the university recognizes that they need great, committed, dedicated, full-time teachers. And in academia, the truest, the biggest, the greatest recognition of that value is creating pathways for promotion and pathways for permanent status, tenure. And so I'm hoping that in the future, the landscape, not just at our university, but at universities across the country, really shifts a little bit to creating some of these tenure-aligned pathways for teaching faculty.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how things develop, because it definitely seems like some universities are definitely taking that position.
Yeah.
Thank you again, Samantha, for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for the conversation. This has been great.
Thank you for joining us today on Moving the Needle. Visit us at umaryland.edu/FCTL to hear additional episodes, leave us feedback, or suggest future topics. We'd love to hear from you.